south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's talk about what happens with everyday life in expat Gringoland. Well, last week I was visiting a slightly upper-middle-class Latin American family home, and upper-middle-class down here is someone making $2,000 to maybe $4,000 a month. Compared to up in the first world, where the bottom rungs of what you might consider upper middle class start at maybe $10,000 to $12,000 a month. Though I could be wrong, I'm 25 years out of the country and don't really have a good handle on that. Not to mention, everybody's idea of where upper middle class begins is slightly different. Upper middle class in New York is a hell of a lot different than upper middle class in Cleveland. Now, the reason why I was at this somewhat upper-middle-class house, Latin American style that is, last weekend, was because expat Eddie's been telling me about this family he knows. They live 3 or 4 kilometers away from his subdivision, and they've got this very amazing, special, weird dog. It's a mutt, all right, but it's got some habits you won't believe. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this in a past show or not, about a certain dog that I saw once out on the street on New Year's Eve when everyone was blowing off fireworks at midnight. And this dog, contrary to every other dog I've ever known, just loves explosions and firecrackers. In fact, you light and throw a firecracker and he'll chase it down to the ground as the fuse is running down, kick it around a bit with his paws, play with it a while, then grab it with his mouth and toss it till it finally blows. He actually knows how to judge those things. Yep, they blow all right, a couple of feet from his head usually, and he's got scars to prove it. So he may be judging these things correctly now, but early on, she, made a few permanent errors. Now, you might think this is a belated April Fool's story, or I'm really pulling your leg, but I assure you, it's real. So what happens after the explosions are over? Well, that dog rushes down the street to the next driveway where kids are blowing off more firecrackers and does the very same thing. Everybody in the neighborhood knows and loves that dog. He's part of the festivities. Anyway, years ago, when I told expat Eddie that story, he laughed and said, "I totally believe you, Johnny, but it must be a Latin dog thing. I've never seen an American dog do that. However, that might be because fireworks are illegal up in the States, so dogs don't ever get a chance to get their kicks like that." Then Eddie said, "Johnny, you know, I've been meaning to talk to you about something. There's a dog a couple of kilometers down from my neighborhood in San Salvador that's sort of locally famous too. He does that trick and one better. And what I want to do is go down there and film that thing for a couple of minutes and send it to that show up in the States, America's Funniest Home Videos or the Funniest Pet Videos, whatever." Last year, Eddie said at midnight, he went over there and watched that dog and made a deal with the owner that they were going to film it. That is, Eddie was going to film it. And they were going to send it in and split the top $5,000 prize. But they never did. You know how life is. A lot of times you talk about things but never do them. Now, get this. Eddie said, not only does this dog go after fireworks, with burn marks and scars and bare patches to prove it. Now, Eddie said her daily pastime is even more strange. She hunts down iguanas and reptiles by day and brings them home. She'll wound them just enough so they're still alive and can't get away and deposit them on the patio. And when she's got 4 or 5 of them together, she'll play with them and herd them around until she gets bored, and eventually they limp off into the brush if they're not fatally damaged. But when the game's on, Eddie said it's hilarious. She herds them right back together again, and that could go on for hours. Just like the firecrackers, it's a game for this dog. So Eddie, with his iPhone, brought me along as a gringo eyewitness. And hopefully, that day, the dog would perform. Anyway, for you longtime listeners, you might remember maybe 300 shows ago, I spoke about the things I bring along with me when I'm traveling. You know, I always have a small piece of luggage in my car, one of those little stewardess roll-on jobs, a small one. Kind of my bug-out bag, you know, enough clothes for 3 or 4 days, and a lot of other little things that I mentioned on this show, including security items and personal items that come in very handy and will for you, too. And don't worry, one of these days we'll have up on our new website, thenewexpat.com, a complete breakdown of all those little things I carry with me, as well as those certain special little items you should have on hand if you're going to live outside the U.S. Wouldn't you like to be able to get all that stuff in one place? Well, we're working on it. Anyway, in my so-called little bug-out bag, I actually don't like that term, but everybody seems to know what I'm talking about when I mention it. Anyway, I have a very small plastic Bodum, that's B-O-D-U-M, coffee maker. You coffee aficionados up there in the States know what I'm talking about. They call it the French press method. It's considered the second best way to make coffee. The best way being having one of those $1,000 Italian espresso machines, which is out of the question for 99% of people. When you're down here in Latin America, the land of the greatest coffee in the world, and don't start sending me emails telling me that Kona coffee is better. Well, it's certainly more pricey because it's picked with gringo labor at minimum wage instead of Latin labor at their minimum wage. What is that now? 12 to 15 bucks a day? So if you're an expat in Latin America and you're gonna have a legal vice, it might as well be coffee. Like expat Eddie says, if you don't get into coffee down here, it's like living across the street from Disneyland or from Caesar's Palace in Vegas and never stepping foot in the place. Anyway, I've always got this little portable plastic Bodum French press coffee maker on hand. And for a long time, I had the glass one because there was no plastic model. And, of course, I broke it a few times. Until I figured out if I packed it with something under pressure, like socks or underwear, clean, or not so clean, depending if it's the beginning or the end of your trip, then there'd only be a very slight chance of breakage. However, now, with the no BPA plastic Bodums, they can really take a beating, and I haven't broken one now in about 5 years. Of course, I don't actually believe in putting food or beverages in any kind of plastic container. But now, surprise, surprise, the company Bodum has come through with a stainless steel portable French press that's got insulated walls so that it holds your coffee nice and warm for a long time. In fact, I'm about to get that stainless steel one myself and retire the old plastic one. Or just give it away. The cost? 30 bucks. Now, I'm sure there's other companies out there that make stainless steel, but Bodum's a name to trust. Now, remember, if you're down here in Latin America, you could get the best coffee in the world for around $4 to $6 a pound, if you know where to get it. And if you come to my next Latin Insider seminar, I just might take you to the coffee plantation myself. Now, it's true, Costco and Walmart and all the local grocery stores have huge selections of coffee, plenty of coffee selection. And there'll be ladies standing there grinding it fresh for you and giving out free cups. However, it's not nearly as fresh or the top quality you can get if you drive right up to the farm and buy it direct. Yes, most coffee plantations have a little kiosk out on the highway so you can buy their wares as you drive by. Of course, they truck the majority of their crop, probably 98% of it, to big markets and such, but they're always selling on the side of the road. In fact, Latin America is the land of roadside vegetable stands, too. So you will, when you're driving out in the boonies, come across little coconut, pineapple, banana, macadamia nut, watermelon, you name it kind of stand out in the boonies. So take advantage, you can't get any fresher or cheaper than that. Oh, and by the way, if you decide to grow some of your own coffee, a lot of gringos do that as a spare time enterprise, all it really takes is an acre or two and you can make some money. Of course, it's all manual labor and you'll hire people to do that. Then you got to have the stuff roasted. And it's dead easy to tell the difference between roasted and non-roasted. Non-roasted, it looks kind of beige. Roasted, dark chocolate to brown, even black. And for you real coffee experts out there, you know there's probably 20 different kinds of roasts. Just go to Starbucks and look at the list. I mean, for starters, there's light, medium, cinnamon, American, continental, European, espresso, Viennese, Italian, French, New Orleans. And if you ask me, or any real long-time coffee grower down here in Latin America, you'll find out there's probably really only 3 or 4 kinds of roasts. The rest of the ones you've seen at Starbucks or at gourmet coffee shops are a PR invention. That's why if you go directly to a coffee plantation, even a big one, they'll have maybe only 1, 2, or at most 3 different kinds of roasts. Now, according to most coffee growers who know much more about coffee than I do, they just laugh and make a face when you start talking about 20 or 30 different kinds of roasts. You know what they're thinking? Those crazy-ass gringos. That said, down here in Latin America, when you're wondering about what kind of roast to get, just tell the owner or the guy behind the counter, give me what you think is best. The usual suspect. Your regular old run-of-the-mill roast that's been winning all kinds of international awards for the last 50 years. Tell them you want that. In fact, even if you go to a big coffee plantation and they've got a little outlet where you can walk in and buy little souvenirs and knickknacks as well as have a cup of coffee, chances are they're only going to have 2 or 3 different kinds of roasts. And if you say, hey, give me a Viennese roast, will you? They're not going to know what the hell you're talking about. So then what about going to a gourmet coffee shop in the States and getting Viennese roast? Well, they must be getting raw coffee beans and roasting it themselves or having it imported from some Vienna hot dog. Because you see, unroasted coffee beans can last 3 or 4 months, but once you roast them, a couple of weeks only, they say. However, I've had really good coffee down here from beans that were roasted 1 or even 2 months previous to that, as long as they were nicely vacuum-packed. Now, you might think I'm really digressing here, but actually, I'm not. If you remember, I started by saying that I visited a slightly upper-middle-class Latin house last week. Here's the rest of the story. Even though they have the best coffee in the world down here in Latin America, 95% of households do not know how to make a decent cup of coffee. They use the percolator method, which is pretty crappy, you know that. It keeps getting reheated and reboiled. In fact, almost no Latin house I've ever been in has had a real espresso machine. Not one that actually worked, anyway. And you longtime listeners might have guessed why. Upper middle class Latins and the wealthy ones will buy such devices because, well, it's the cool thing to do. All the gringo families on TV have one in their kitchen. And now, just recently, you could buy them down here at Costco and Walmart. So upper middle class and wealthy Latins will buy those things, just like they'll buy gas and electric clothes dryers and dishwashers and trash compactors. But in the end, after the initial pleasure jolt of actually having one is over, they'll quit using them. Why? The maid or cleaning lady with that second or third grade education will pull a boner and wreck the mechanism. In fact, I've had mine put a plastic apron in my gas clothes dryer and it melted like a solid mass against the inside wall, ruined that load of clothes and stunk up the next 2 loads permanently. Surprised, the thing just didn't poop out altogether. And after that, the cleaning lady was simply afraid to ever touch that thing again. I wouldn't let her anyway. And as far as reading the manual, even though it's in Spanish and English, all manuals come in 4 languages now, right? Well, it turns out she can't read multiple syllable words. Such is that fine, free public school education down here in Latin America. That said, there's many thousands of dryers and dishwashers in upscale kitchens in Latin America that don't get used anymore. Just like the new upscale fad of having espresso coffee machines. Oh no, not the $1,000 jobs, the real good ones from Italy. I'm talking about the cheapos from Oster and Black & Decker that you see at Costco and Walmart. You know, those light-duty, all-aluminum jobs made in China for 40 or 50 bucks. So anyway, in Latin America, they've got the greatest coffee in the world, and the only way you're going to be able to taste it like it should be is to have an espresso machine yourself. Or to go to one of the local coffee shops. They always have good Italian espresso makers. And the next best thing, of course, a French press. And so, coffee snob that I am, I'll always ask when I go to a restaurant, is your coffee from an espresso machine or are you percolating it? If it's percolated, I won't get it. By the way, you can use an espresso machine to get a regular cup of coffee. It's called Café Americano down here. It's just espresso with hot water in a regular coffee cup. Anyway, back to the story. I'm in this slightly upper middle class Latin home. They've got coffee and, of course, the good old percolator. Meanwhile, in my car, I've got my Bodum. So, coffee snob that I am, I'll use some uncharacteristic diplomacy to work that Bodum into the conversation. When it's coffee and pastry time, I've been known to say, hey, you just got to see this great new way to make single cups of coffee. Let me go out in the car and get this French press thing. I want to show you. Now, I haven't insulted the family at all. I've actually piqued their interest. Now they want to see what the gringo is going to do, how he's going to make his coffee. So I go to the car, bring out the portable Bodum, and they're all standing around looking at it. So what do I need? A little coffee, they've always got that, and some hot water, practically boiling. Then the maid slash cleaning lady, ever eager to help a gringo in distress, will go get the water and start boiling it. And yes, they'll have those 5-gallon jugs of what they consider pure water. It's not. But that's what you're stuck with. I can't very well bring my water purifier in the kitchen and start making my own. Now that would be an insult. Now, like I said, when Latins get water from one of those water purification companies, there's no guarantee that it's any better than the water out of the tap, except it's actually clear and not mucky. I'm not going to go through that analysis again. I did that a number of times in past shows. You know what that's all about yet, ready, right? And the thing that always cracks me up, even 25 years into this game in Latin America, when people offer you a glass of water or water at a restaurant, they'll say, would you like some agua pura, which translates precisely to pure water? And I'm always thinking, no, I want water from the frickin' gutter, buddy. I don't drink it pure. I'm tough. You get the idea. And you know, the word agua pura, or pure water, is totally misleading anyway. But there isn't a Latin person I've ever met who knows any different. Now, when I'm at someone's house and they've got bottled water like that, and that's probably half the population of Latin America, the other half are way too poor to afford the buck a day, whatever it costs, to get those refills. So the poor will drink it straight out of the tap if it's not too mucky, and otherwise they'll boil it. Now, of course, when I'm at someone's house and they offer me a cup of coffee or some lemonade, whatever, I know they're using water from one of those water companies or they're boiling it out of the tap. Really, no good either way, right? However, at least I know I'm only contaminating myself once or twice a month when I'm out at somebody's house. All other times, I'm drinking my own personally purified water. So the maid I was talking about, ever eager to help a gringo in distress, tried to boil some water on the stove. And guess what? Out of propane gas again, and Latins never have a spare tank. Even upscale wealthy ones just aren't prepared. However, most long-term expats are. So when Latins run out of gas, they're out of gas for a couple hours till the guy makes a delivery. In the meantime, she pours that water into a plastic cup and walks on over to the microwave. And you know, I'm not at all big on microwaves. I don't cook with them, but I have one in the house just in case. Heat some water or something. Some people don't even like doing that. Anyway, I did make a fuss. I said, no problem. You've got no propane gas. Okay, let's microwave it. So I went over to help. I opened the microwave door. Guess what? Three medium-sized cockroaches staring at me right on the glass turntable. They were bold. They didn't scatter. And if they could talk, I know they'd be saying, what do you want? And if they could hear my answer, what do I want? I want to nuke your little asses to kingdom come. Now, as it turns out, these cockroaches down here in Latin America are so tough, even with your microwave on high power 10, it seems like nothing more than a nice tanning bed for these critters. So, with all classes of Latins, you'll find cucarachas living in the microwave. Yes, it seems quite a happy home for them. Though, you won't see them in most expat microwaves, because we train our maids just exactly how to clean them. Not, for example, once a month, but every time you cook something. Now, there's three cockroaches kind of looking at me. At least I can sense they're looking at me. Though they don't seem to like being stared at. Now, do note that when cockroaches don't scatter when you flick the light on or you look in the microwave, you know they've taken over the house. They've basically become fearless. Now, that's not to say all expat gringos have high standards. Some have learned to live side by side with their cucaracha brethren. You know, all God's creatures are beautiful in their own way and all that crap. Well, I beg to differ. Have you seen Hillary lately? Anyway, some of the gringos I know that have gone native, well, I don't even like to sit on their furniture. That can be especially true of gringos who've gone native in a certain way, that is, they've married a middle or lower middle class Latina who'd had a kid or two already. So naturally, the stepkids are absorbed into the new gringo family household, and those kids coming from poor neighborhoods have all those bad habits, and in fact, have learned to live side by side with, you guessed it, cucarachas. So anyway, the teenage maid, the cleaning lady, swooped those arrogant cockroaches away with the swipe of her hand. They faded into the dirty, rusty cracks in the back of the microwave. Then she proceeded to microwave my coffee water for about a minute and a half. Now, we all do and eat things sometimes our heart is not at all into. We don't want to offend our hosts, right? For example, food that armies of flies have recently landed on, and the dreaded chicken feet soup. I tried about 3 drops of the broth once, but my churning stomach wouldn't let me get anywhere near those feet. Even thinking of it now gives me the willies. But in this case, I have to pat myself on the back. I was slightly clever enough to do a switch. I made 3 or 4 cups of my Bodum coffee and passed them around. And of course, poured one for myself, but in the excitement, no one noticed that I never drank it. But in the end, it was all for naught, because Eddie told me even though the family praised my coffee up and down, they were just being kind and really only humoring another crazy gringo with a funky machine. Turns out none of them really liked it much, but vastly preferred their own overhated, over-percolated coffee that had been sitting on the stove all day. Oh, and by the way, all you listeners out there concerned about Alzheimer's, except for those Mr. Coffee clones with the glass beaker, most percolators down here are aluminium, as the Brits would say. As are most all big cooking pots here in Latin America, too. So, just remember that when you're at a restaurant. Any restaurant. Oh, and by the way, Teflon frying pans are very big down here, too, because they're cheap and Latins see them all over the TV on infomercials day in and day out. And it's always a happy, blonde-haired gringo housewife doing the cooking. Yep, the gringo advantage strikes again. Now remember, we're talking about a 20 or 30-year lag time on Teflon products, right? In fact, once I remember I was in a middle-class Latin kitchen, I noticed a whole counter full of stacked-up old Teflon-coated pans. Well, they used to be coated with Teflon. Now it was mostly all scraped off. I remember saying to the cook-slash-cleaning lady, "How do you like using those Teflon pans?" She says, "Yes, I like them." Then I said, "Yeah, but look, there's no Teflon on them anymore. Where do you think all that Teflon went?" And then she gave me the universal beats me shoulder shrug. I said, "I know where it went. Little by little, it got cooked in with the food and eaten." In the end, she just thought I was another crazy gringo. I guess I am. Oh, and speaking of maintenance guys, cleaning ladies, and handymen. The other day, I was at a relatively new expat friend of mine's house, a guy that came down to one of my Latin American seminars not so long ago. He was one of those guys that told me at the seminar he was coming back to live for sure, and he did. Came back about 6 months later, and he's here now. Now he's renting in a very nice gated community. How'd he find that rental? Well, he did what a lot of returning seminar attendees do. They get a hold of me, then I get a hold of some of my seminar translator ladies. We find out your needs and put a plan together for you, an itinerary. And when you get down here, we have someone readily available, someone that you know already from the seminar, and help you not only to find a rental, a car, a property, whatever. We make sure you don't pay gringo prices. That's generally the ultimate goal, right? To find a nice, safe neighborhood and still pay a third or less of what you'd pay up in the States. And with the guy I'm talking about now, that's exactly what we helped him do. And the other day he phoned me up and said, "Johnny, you're an engineer, right? Got a little problem here. I'm looking for an electrician to come in and check some wiring because some of the lights went out into the bedrooms. Now, I called my landlord and he's slow about everything, but like you said, that's the Latin American way. So many times I just end up doing things myself, fixing a little plumbing, leak in the sink, whatever." Now, the landlord said he will call an electrician to come in, but I know he probably won't get here for 2 weeks. 2 bedrooms with no lights for 2 weeks? No good. But he also said if I found an electrician, he'd just reimburse me or take it off the rent. Good deal, right? That's why I'm calling you, Johnny. Do you have a referral? Do you know anyone? And the answer to that, well, I've been down here 25 years or so. Of course I know somebody. So the very next day, I popped over to my gringo friend's house with my maintenance guy, who is an experienced house builder. Now, he's not good at finish work, but he can do plumbing, electrical, roof work, whatever. With his real specialty being concrete, he is an artist at concrete work and fine detailed plastering and all that for, get this, $15 a day. So I went over there with my maintenance guy. In the meantime, I told my expat buddy to phone up an electrical contractor, whether on OXL.com, you know, that's kind of the Craigslist down here, or in the yellow pages on the internet, or in the newspaper classifieds. So the next morning, when my maintenance guy and I got there, the electrical contractor the expat called had been there already. He found the problem in the main fuse box in the laundry room. One of the circuit breakers had flipped, and it wouldn't flip back, and it wasn't the breaker. So he followed the wires back to the 2 bedrooms, and noticed a trickle of small black ants who had, over 6 or 7 years, the age of the house, had succeeded in eating the plastic-colored insulation off the red, white, and black wires, leaving spots here and there of bare metal that had shorted permanently. In fact, when I looked at it, you could see that 2 of the wires were actually welded together. They touched, sparked, and melted. But not to worry, the breaker box did its job and cut off the power. Now, the real point here is not to wing it yourself, but to get some good advice from long-term expats like me. No, not the ones sitting at the gringo bar in Costa Rica either. Anyway, my gringo friend said the electrical contractor gave him an estimate of $110 to pull out the wires that shorted and replace them. To which my maintenance guy said, "Wait a minute. Let me call my friend, a registered electrician that doesn't have a big ad in the yellow pages." And the guy came over in his motorcycle about 35 minutes later, went to the main box, disconnected the wires in that box, pulled them back through that tube at the other end in one of the rooms, and pointed out that all the damage was done in a section of wire about 5 inches long, not the whole length of the wire, which was about 50 feet. And he said he'd just splice some new ones in. It would be good as new. He'd give it a guarantee. The whole job, he said, would take maybe 3 hours, and he'd give the tube a shot of insecticide because, he said, if not, those ants will come back. Total cost? Get this, $18. Now, my gringo buddy who was renting didn't care who fixed it, and he didn't really care about the price because it was either going to come off his rent or he was just going to get reimbursed. But look at the difference there. It's gringo prices versus Latin prices. Turns out the first electrician he called didn't even mention pulling the wires to see the extent of the damage. He just instantly hit the guy with gringo prices, which is still, by the way, a half to a third of what an electrician up in the States would have charged for the same job. In fact, I doubt in Cleveland you could get an electrician to ring your doorbell for under $50. So that's the value of knowing long-term gringos here, especially off the gringo tourist trail. Well, and by the way, about those amazing ants. The electrician said you stick a mothball in your fuse box and they'll go away. They won't come back. That said, speaking about my Latin American seminar, remember, it starts on January 9th. And if you sign up by November 1st, you get a $500 per person discount. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's Latin American Seminar. There's a link top center on the page. Get on board and get that discount. Oh, and by the way, I got another volley of emails this week asking me how long I'm going to keep putting on these seminars, and my answer is always the same. If you're going to come down, don't procrastinate too much, because there will come a time, and I think it's going to be very soon, that the next big tipping point is going to fall, whether it's economic calamity, terrorism, or natural disaster, war, whatever. There's something in the air, and we all know it. It's coming. So when that happens, you can bet that old Vomit will severely crack down on traveling outside the U.S. because, well, Big Brother does want to keep its cows in the pen now, you know. It can't milk them when they're gone. So do sign up for my January 2016 seminar. You won't regret it. Like I said before, it's all about the people you meet and the contacts you make. And believe me, you just can't find expert expat friends like that on your own coming down for a week or two to Costa Rica or Cancun. Even those big international living seminars are nothing but disguised real estate cattle calls. But you knew that already, right? Oh yeah, whatever did happen to that dog that eats firecrackers and rounds up iguanas? Well, Eddie got the footage and you might be seeing it on YouTube. I'll let you know. Now, the dog's so butt ugly, when it was born, they named it Moco, which means booger in Spanish. Now, the owner asked Eddie and I if there was a kinder name in English for the word booger, since every time he mentioned the dog's name in front of an English speaker, they'd snicker. And Eddie said, yeah, you could have named it Hillary.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.